Hi, I'm James Richardson with a quick word on the audio treats The Athletic have in store this season. Three times a week you get the award-winning Totally Football Show with the likes of James Horncastle, Raphael Honigstein, Carl Anker and Rory Smith and me. Mark Chapman hosts The Athletic Football Podcast, a flashy four times a week with David Ornstein, Adam Crafton and many others. The Athletic Women's Football Podcast will have all the Women's Super League coverage off the back of their brilliant Euros. And The Offside Rule is back too with weekly episodes. That's not all. There are eight dedicated club shows. There's Adam Hurry's joyous football cliches show, Michael Cox's insightful athletic football tactics podcast, the offbeat TIFO football podcast, and a revamped football manager show too. Ooh. You can get all of these shows wherever you find your podcast or listen ad-free on the Athletic app.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Oh, I say, it's amazing.
He does it tame and tame and tame again.
Crank up the music, charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
A quick word for the small matter of the European champions. Fulham's genuinely scandalous, fraudulent kit-evoking. Why the Colorado Rapids are the new Stoke. The most footballery description of someone's wedding of all time. The rules of figuratively driving a player to the airport yourself. The threshold for the X-million pound man. When does a pass become a ball? And the most atmospheric school playground kickabout ever recorded. Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 178 of Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry and with me first of all is Charlie Eccleshare. How's it going?
Very well, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Great reception, I thought, to Leeds Days. The quote tweets in particular were sensational. Lots of people from Korea just saying, I had no idea this came from soccer. Incredible.
I know, it was so nice seeing how many people said they used it and weren't even necessarily football fans. So yeah, great. And also, as with anything like that, you'd always have the fear of someone piping up and being like, actually, I think you'll find this. There was none of that. So yeah,
none. Delighted. Not a single one. Fantastic. Great. Took it in great humour. And what we taketh with the cultural capital from Korea, we giveth back with an explanation, which I thought was fantastic. We all win. We all win. Alongside you for the adjudication panel today is David Walker. How's it going? I hear you have something of a post-Euros conundrum for us.
Well, yeah, I was just sort of thinking, amidst all of the euphoria and the celebrations, something...
Not to be a downer on it or anything.
No, not at all. But, like, the whole it's coming home, it's come home, it's home... No one thought about what would happen if it did actually come home. So how do we say it? What's the correct way of referring to that particular bit of phraseology?
I would say I would prefer it's come home over it's home, which is too much of a departure from the original lyrics. I think you need to be faithful to the lyrics.
I think it's come home makes a lot more sense. It's home. That's weird. That sounds a bit weird. Like, because also, it's come home conveys the journey that it's been away and come back.
100%. Lots of people, very naive about this whole process. As much as people like to do a deep dive into this sort of thing, lots of people saying, Charlie, that it's a home tournament. So how could football possibly have come home? As if Euro '96 never happened.
Hello,
what's wrong with people?
I mean, that suggests some people were barely aware of Euro '96, which is odd for us.
Yeah. Dave, I was tempted to do an hour-long debate about whether it has indeed come home, but let's leave that aside. Let's leave Three Lions aside just for another year. But let's talk about the Lionesses. Let's do a little brief chronology of the whole final, if possible. It started off, Charlie, with, I think, a real rubber stamping of the importance of this to the nation which is this from Radio 4.
29 minutes past eight. There's some football on tomorrow night, apparently, Mike.
There is a small matter of a major European final at Wembley. Yes, Michelle. 32 hours, in fact, or so roughly, to go until surely the biggest football match in the history of the England women's side.
A nicely poised small matter of, Charlie, and a well-delivered one too. All for it. Two thumbs up from me.
Yep, absolutely textbook. And the countdown in the hours.
Yeah.
To get across precisely how... Yeah, but I think, to convey that, precisely how excited we all are.
Dave, I do fear that the winning goal, which Cliché's alumnus James Moore pointed out, was a really Wembley-y goal, sort of a poked home from a set piece. I think that's a very astute observation, actually.
Yes, you could... If you could see it fitting perfectly if you transplanted in the old Wembley.
Right.
I could sort of see that being a 1972 FA Cup final winning goal.
Worked in any era. Charlie said it was very playoff finally.
Yeah, I think it is very new Wembley. I think that's really spot on. For some reason, especially those early ones at the new Wembley where you never seem to get good goals. Mm. All the goals seem to be kind of scrappy set-piece efforts.
I agree.
It does. That's a good
point, actually. Does Wembley have a defining wonder goal? I can't think of an absolutely incredible venue-defining goal.
Do you know what the best goal probably is? Is the Barovian Bedlam one.
Yeah.
That's an absolute worldie.
Steve Morrison for Millwall, possibly?
Yeah.
God knows what game it was, but that was an incredible goal. But
yeah.
It needs to be a top-level match.
Was that against Scunthorpe?
Something like that.
In the playoff final? Yeah.
But England haven't really scored an absolutely incredible goal.
No, Dele Alli scored a good one from range.
Yeah. It needs it. Just to justify the cost. Needs to repay its transfer fee.
A huge chunk of that taxpayer's...
But the drama of that winning goal, Dave, perhaps overshadowed, as they often do, the earlier goal from Ella Toon. This is what Daniel B asks us. How would you describe Ella Toon's finish? Was it a chip, a dink, a lofted finish? The ball, he says, was slightly bouncing, which I feel puts it out of chip territory. It was too high for a dink, didn't feel lobby enough for a lob. I would actually say lifted over the goalkeeper for this one.
Great point in this, because I was thinking exactly this in the aftermath of the goal. Because of the arc and the loop of the ball, I wanted to see the replay to see the sort of technique that she'd used. And that little bounce, because initially I thought she might have scooped it.
It went very high, but
she didn't. No, the bounce was there. So I think, but it wasn't with the side of the foot, was it?
It was still with
the sort of the laces. Yeah. So I think lifted is quite a good one. It's definitely not. It's not a chip because.
Definitely not a chip.
Yeah, you need to be going down into the ground to chip.
And
the
trajectory
ball.
Was too flat for it to be a lob, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, it was a bit loopy.
You won't like this, Adam, because it's a computer game reference. But right. when Pro Evo had its day, on the PlayStation, if you pressed L1 and square, which was shoot, it did exactly what that goal did. You probably still can.
Still do it on FIFA 22. It is quite a feat. It was quite a FIFA-esque arc to the ball, actually.
It had exactly the trajectory that if you... press those buttons, produce.
Yeah, there was definitely a sort of gentle elegance to it, which I think lends itself to lifting rather than anything else. It wasn't cheeky enough for a dink.
Or a scoop.
Nor was the ball on the floor. No, exactly. Absolutely right. Really enjoyed this from Captain Leah Williamson after the game, Charlie, who adhered so strictly to the proudest day of her life script.
As captain, this must be one of your proudest moments.
The proudest moment of my life. And to the day I have kids, I suppose, so...
incredible dexterity to turn it into a hypothetical situation, but still sticking to the immutable law.
Do you think that was in case any future children of hers watched it and were offended? So it's sort of like conveying that, or to anyone who's had kids.
Yeah, it's such a shame that this disclaimer has to exist, Charlie.
I mean, I remember once watching a documentary where someone was talking about the best day of their life, and they were like, no, why would having kids or being married be up there? Everyone does that. Whereas what I'm talking about is truly extraordinary. And I did think, fair enough.
Yeah. Well, you're both fathers. Are you having that as the proudest day of your life?
Proudest.
Well, the live show was good, wasn't it?
being in that pub afterwards. I mean...
Yeah, didn't get that in the maternity ward.
You were probably more anxious before the live show than the birth of your firstborn, weren't you?
Wouldn't be surprised. Some more script sticking to situations. Dave, the players have been given the freedom of the City of London. Within about sort of 7 a.m. of the win as well. That's too early. At least give it some thought.
So I did see Lottie Wubben-Moy, forgive me if I pronounce that incorrectly, tweeted after this news saying, great, does that mean we get like free tubes, free bus pass and everything now? And I did want to rain on her parade, but is she clear on what the City of London is? Is it just that little bit? It's just a square mile, like near Bank and Liverpool Street.
Yeah. So. They can drive their sheep through the City of London, but no free tube. But Charlie, I mean, is this enough? To me, it feels quite MBE.
Oh, yes. I think absolutely MBE at a minimum. And then probably with a smattering of higher honours.
Mm. Sports personality of the year, you mean?
Oof. Let's not start that.
I think they're going to give it to the whole team.
Ooh. Well, there is a team category,
isn't there? Of course there is.
So, yeah, you know, so it would be Beth Mead, won't it? I guess.
You reckon?
I think so. Player of the tournament, top scorer, I think nailed on. I think before this, I was looking at this the other day for some unknown reason. I think Ronnie O'Sullivan was a favourite in a betting or something. You forget that now.
Yeah. It must be hard, like, when you're basically this sort of de facto, there isn't anyone better favourite for BBC Sports Personality, and then something massive happens. You think, oh, fuck. Yeah. I was going to sneak in there under the radar.
O'Sullivan as well feels like he must be there so many years just knocking around. Like, I would just assume in any given year he'd be a contender.
I think there should be some damehoods, surely. You know, like an Olympic gold medal.
Oh, no, that's what I mean. I think when I say a smattering of left, right and centre. More senior. Yeah. I think, captain.
Dame Jill Scott as the senior player in the tide?
Potentially. I just think Olympics, you know, not necessarily from perspective, sit higher than that in the national pantheon of things to be impressed by.
Can we give honour?
You can give an honorary touch. Damehood. Right. You can give honorary ones. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, we'll see.
Where do you think...
Honorary,
you
know, honour.
An honorary honour. In the sort of pantheon of they'll never have to buy a drink in X place. Does that stretch to the whole country? Is that just to the town they're from? Will they never have to buy a pint in England? That seems a bit much.
You don't have that. You have to specify the location. So never have to buy a drink again. Yeah.
Never have to buy a drink again.
But, you know, I'm assuming they're not big drinkers. Well, they're elite athletes.
Yeah. Germany, though. They might have to put the bill in Germany.
Well, they took it badly, didn't they? Yeah. Which is, I think it was just excellent. A real added twist for the whole thing. But I've noticed a little strand throughout the latter stages of this tournament, Charlie, that I think this might be, and bear with me here, the most a quick word for triumph in English sporting history. So many people getting a quick word beyond the obvious, as it almost becomes a game of one-upmanship amongst experts in the field. So, well, actually, a quick word for this very obscure person you may not have heard of, but got the ball rolling back in 1973. It's such a quick word for-y situation, this.
Yeah, I mean, I can really understand it as well, because I'm sure there are lots of people who have been following the England women's team and women's football generally very closely. And there was certainly a degree of territory marking, I think, on Twitter yesterday, which I totally get, because I can imagine if I'd been, you know, following it for a long time, and then suddenly all these Johnny come latelys. But I think it does slightly play into that, because if you can, as you say, one up someone with a quick word for, you are very much showing the extent of your knowledge on this area that now everyone claims to be an expert about.
Yeah, I agree. But generally speaking, Dave, I've come up with a quick word for hierarchy for these situations.
Okay.
Top of the list for quick words for are players who played well in the game but didn't score. So in this situation, that would be Ciara Walsh, so kind of the midfield kind of anchor, which is traditionally quite an unspectacular role. So sort of a quiet going about their business situation. So that's very quick word for-y, I think.
Yeah, although she did assist the crucial opening goal.
That's true.
Which I think is a little bit more deserving of more than a quick...
The crucial opening goal. Are you happy with that? You sticking with that?
Well, it broke the deadlock.
Yeah, it was one of the two, which makes it, crucial difference. Yeah, I completely agree. Second sort of mid-table in the hierarchy of quick words for are the fans, Charlie. Quick word for the fans, who were great. I also, after the semi-final, I heard a quick word for the people of Sheffield. That's too much.
There are actually a lot, because there's the staff, they're, you know, the sort of people behind the scenes who we don't get to see every day. The rest of the squad as well, you know, even the players who didn't play.
Yeah.
A quick word for them, because, you know, they could have sulked. They haven't done any of that. They've been behind us every step of the way.
Yeah.
I sort of did my own quick word for on Twitter yesterday, shouting out Robin Cowan and Rachel Brown-Finnis, who I didn't see much praise for in the immediate aftermath of the game. I thought both were brilliant, but I don't know where they are in the hierarchy.
So bringing broadcasters in the equation, but then I guess there's, in this example, there's more of a vested interest there. They've been on that journey, so I would allow them into the Quick Word for universe. Robin Cowan, friend of the show, so fully deserving of that.
I said proudly that Robin Cowan had been a guest on this podcast.
Absolutely right. Before everyone got on this bandwagon.
Exactly, yeah. Quick word for us, actually.
Anyway, the next up, this is from Harvey Spencer. And now, obviously, the Lionesses' run to Euro 2022 glory has been a showcase of textbook pre and post-match and morning after social media. I've seen a lot, Charlie, of how you feeling today, guys. I mean, there's a lot of sort of conversational, that sort of stuff. You know what I mean? Simply by that noise. But it's starting to bleed into general football chat. As I said, Harvey Spencer has brought my attention to this. This is from Southampton's Twitter account after the pre-season friendly win over Monaco, where they simply said, about last night.
Yeah.
Come on.
I mean, that we were talking about this, weren't we, in our WhatsApp group the other day about some of those staples. That I mean, at the best of times, it feels very just generic and standard.
Can't do it for
but after a friendly win. Yeah.
About last night.
What? Was that the game where there was a wonder goal in it?
Wait,
I don't think it even was. I think that was a different game. And even if there is...
You're talking about the Joey Rebo solo efforts.
But that was against Villarreal, wasn't it?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. But the accompanying picture to the about last night caption is just of... I don't even know who that player is. Just one of their players just sort of going up against... Like, it's just a sort of 50-50 sort of situation in the middle of the pitch. There's no...
Empty stand behind them. About last night. You weren't there, but...
What about it?
Yeah, exactly. Better fill you in because none of you bothered to turn up. Anyway, let's not be lazy with our social media, English football. Next up, Reading's new kit for the 2022-23 season has a very noble approach behind it. It's the sleeves have lines on them, Dave, representing the average temperature for Berkshire across the club's history in an effort to highlight the effects of climate change. Right. Now, quite a creative thing to do. It's obviously a very, very newsworthy thing to be doing, very, very urgent thing to do. But don't evoke that. That's the last thing you want to evoke, isn't it? The world ending. Don't evoke that.
I mean, no. But I mean, I think there is, obviously, that's the point, right?
Yeah, a subtle nod to the tail end of the Industrial Revolution. Speaking of which, this simply leads me into the rest of this, Charlie, because this puts the Craven in Craven Cottage. Fulham have unveiled their new away shirt, which they describe as a bold pulse mint strip, featuring a detailed modern interpretation of the Craven Cottage brickwork panelled across the front of the body. And my first thought was, that's a bit of a stretch, but, you know, whatever, you've got to take your inspiration from somewhere. It emerges that it's simply an Adidas template that is being used from loads of other clubs. So Standard Liège have exactly the same shirt, for example. So presumably that's also inspired by the Craven Cottage brickwork. My point is here, we're all so well-versed in kit speak. It's a perennial curiosity for us, but I don't think I've ever seen it reverse engineered like this. You can't do that. It's absolutely, genuinely scandalous, I think.
I mean... Yeah, that's an amazing post-rationalisation, isn't it? Credits them in a way for being presented with this, thinking, right, how can we justify this? How can we personalise it?
You know, the watchdog should get involved here.
Cheating the fans. What if you're a fan who buys that based on this sort of lovely nod to the Craven Cottage brickwork, and then you go to another, you go to a foreign city to watch a team play, and you have this horrible realisation.
They should have just gone the whole hog and actually had, like, proper brick-coloured... shirt.
Yeah.
Just take a photo of the actual brickwork and bang it on there.
bang it on there. Kit designed by Dave Walker. I don't know if this is better or worse, Dave, but Bournemouth unveiled their new home kit for the season. Sort of jaggedy lines instead of stripes.
Seems to be very, very of the moment, that. There's a lot of jagged... I've seen a lot of jagged kits.
Palace is
very jagged. Inter have got a jaggedy stripe thing.
Yeah, it's not a bad direction to go in, but Bournemouth claim that it's inspired by and reflective of the club's architectural stadium pillars. Come on! Who has not been impressed by the stadium pillars down
at the Vitality Stadium?
Honestly, really.
This is really like having your cake and eat it with these templates. Because if you're going to be lazy and just use temp, if the manufacturers are going to use templates, that then the only benefit from that, I suppose, is that it should take away those sort of nonsense justifications.
Mm.
To have both is is ridiculous.
It is
having
point.
Your cake and eating it.
Yeah, I completely agree. Delighted to be informed this week, Charlie, that Match magazine of our youths are still doing their season tracker and tabs for 2022-23. You know, the things you slot in, the little shirt things that you slot into these slots for the league
ladders.
Table. Yeah, the ladder. Oh, league ladders. That's what did Shoot call them league ladders, and that's why Match aren't allowed to call them that?
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
That must be what the situation is. But yeah, they're still going. But a classy touch, Charlie. But fair play to anyone who has ever maintained six divisions of these tabs from August to May. How can anyone have the discipline?
I mean, I think if we weren't doing those however many years ago, pre-internet, when it was all set up for that, you know, we were at an age where we would still, you know, fill things in and that kind of thing. And even even for us, this was a bridge too far.
I mean, like, there literally are probably a reasonable amount of people the world over whose job it is to update league tables for various digital outlets across the world. It's a job. Sitting down on a Monday morning and having to, like...
manual labour involved as well, having to slot them in yourself. It's a joke.
Good few hours a week, I think, really.
Yeah, but Dave, it's also a job to update, you know, World Cup results. But that doesn't stop people filling in wall charts.
Yeah, wall chart man over here.
Different, I think it's a shorter period of time, isn't it?
And it could, in theory, be a collector's item later on in life. You know, if England won the World Cup, then you'd have the wall chart to go with it. You're not gonna preserve your season tracker.
Well, that's a good point. You'd only need the end of the table as well. Just say you did it throughout. This is, I promise, fully completed. Every week I was doing it.
Drawer for 9 months and then just do it at the end. That is sensational.
Time lapse,
That potential. Yeah, hope someone does do that. Right, next up, this is from Ian Copple, who was walking through downtown Denver, Colorado, Dave, and spotted a huge billboard for the Colorado Rapids. And the slogan went thus, "But can they do it on a hot summer night at altitude?" Great to see this format venturing the world. But I suspect there's supposed to be so many people who read that just going, what the fuck? What are they talking about?
Actually, way more of a challenge than doing it on a wet Tuesday night in Stoke.
I guess so, yeah.
Doing it at altitude, yeah. Difficult. Difficult thing to do.
I completely agree. This is from Will Beckman, Charlie. Here's Athletics' Jeanette Quatche completely flipping this concept on its head at the World Athletics Championships.
This platform as well, Ailey, that gives you confidence. Listen, you can run a 400-meter British record on a cold, wet night in Stoke, but if you don't do it on the world stage, then not everybody really kind of looks at that as an achievement.
Ooh, interesting.
Nice. It's twisted it into so many knots. I don't know what to do with the cold night in Stoke anymore.
Yeah. So she's saying there that she's using that as a kind of paradigm for a training session in the sort of wet and cold. And you can dig in and do it then, but can you
so
do it?
So it's easy to do it on a cold night in Stoke. Yeah.
I guess because it's so unglamorous and the eyes of the world aren't on you.
Yeah.
For the Burslem Harriers or something.
Why are they always Harriers? What is that? Oh dear. Can you imagine the Bet365 with a running track around it? I can't. That would turn it into a... too much of a European, but good news for Rory Delap, at least, if they'd had it.
Someone at my son's football, by the way, on Saturday made a sort of Rory Delap throw reference, which I thought was kind of quite easy, low-level dad banter.
It wasn't one of the three-year-olds then. That's good.
No, that would have been pretty advanced.
I think that's got years left in it, mileage-wise, I think. Sorry to mix up my units of measurement there, but quite appropriate that I did so. Charlie, been really looking forward to sharing this one with you. Sometimes footballers just can't help but talk like footballers. Duncan McSween has sent me this in. This was from the Motherwell versus Sligo Rovers programme last Thursday. And Motherwell defender Ricky Lammy is talking about his wedding. "It's one of them that the club was good and the manager was really good with me. It was all done within a week or so. We ended the season on a reasonable high with everything working out so well. So it was a case of just getting something sorted. It was ideal. It let me relax and enjoy an important couple of weeks. I would say we had a big wedding, but my missus will probably say it was small. We had around 100 bodies there. So it was more than enough to have a right good time."
I had to sanity check this with various people from regular walks of life saying, would you ever use bodies for this?
Bodies.
Just need to get some bodies through the door.
Oh, it's so Harry Redknapp's in charge of the guest list. Just need a few more bodies in, you know.
Get some bodies in. That is so good.
I mean, I've heard of headcount, but yeah.
Bondi. Do you know anyone?
Yeah.
We just need an extra couple of bodies. Pairs of legs. Oh, dear. Numbers. Honestly, absolutely perfect. But yeah, footballers will footballer, Charlie, I guess.
Yeah, that's superb.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Early contenders for games gone for 2022-23, Dave. Manchester City have unveiled, I guess, a smart scarf. This is going to be a high-tech scarf.
Wow.
That will it's wearable technology. It has a biometric sensor integrated into the fabric to monitor emotional, physiological and movement data. I don't think the proper football men are going to like this.
This is for supporters to wear.
Yep.
I don't want you to monitor my physiological data when I'm in the stands. Who's monitoring it?
Yeah, they're going to measure your galvanic skin response, your heart rate, your temperatures, your body temperature. It's an odd one. It's going to die a death, isn't it? We're not going to hear about this again.
I mean, I've never heard anything like it. Mm. But, like, what's the point of it?
It just makes me think, Dave, that it's kind of a physical manifestation of those PR emails you receive on a Monday saying so-and-so's fans are the most excitable in the country. According to betfluff.com.
So has it got a little like thing, little, you know, like the heart rate monitors that they have on the backs, of, top of their back, you can see it in the shirt. Has it got one of those things on? Like an electric blanket?
Yeah, I mean, God knows how sophisticated this must be. I mean, Charlie, these must be expensive pieces of equipment. You can't just chuck them in a scarf.
Yeah, I guess it's part of fans wanting to have the same experience as the players, or that, you know, sort of seeing that they wear wearable technologies and they want that. But the only way it would be remotely interesting, and you wouldn't be able to get this, is a comparison with players. But you're not going to get that from, you know, it's not like you're exerting yourself physically at a game.
Will they be sold outside the ground? But get your smart scarf, half an hour.
Knock-off ones. Like with really badly made heart rate monitors on them or something. Yeah, I don't know. Remains to be seen, I imagine. But I think this might be trumped in the game's gone stakes, Charlie, by this. St Albans City FC have announced their stadium naming rights deal for this season with a mobile pizza company, which will see the stadium formally renamed as the Mozzarella Fellas Stadium.
I did see this.
Dignity. There has to be a line. There has to be a line.
That
somewhere.
Surely this is just going to lead to. Do they? Will they ever appear on Soccer Saturday? Will there ever be I mean, Jeff will obviously reference them when they come up on the video printer, but there'll never be anyone there, will they?
I don't think they'd even... what division are we talking? Are they high enough to be even mentioned
National
in
League
passing?
South, I think.
I don't think he would read even their goal scorer out, would he?
No, probably not.
I think he might be tempted now, though.
Yeah,
squeeze it in.
Goal at the Mozzarella Fellas Stadium. Shame. Shame to see the way football's going, to be honest. Also, Dave, I'm starting to think that some people in football are just trying to get themselves into Athletic long reads. This is from Club Hine, who said, according to Gary Weaver on Sky on Friday evening, more on him later, Huddersfield's director of football, Lee Bromby, on at least one occasion deliberately drove slowly to the train station so a prospective signing would miss their train in order to see how they would react. Would he want the player to act in a relaxed mood, showing he can get on with people, or an aggressive mood, showing he cares about punctuality, has an inner passion and drive? Honestly, have no idea. This is a weird little detail.
Amazing.
Pathetic little mind games.
Yeah. So he's driving them to the station after they've had the meeting or whatever. He's deliberately making them late.
I mean,
this is great because whatever you can post-rationalize that then to, exactly. He had exactly that desire, that will to, he wouldn't accept second best, or it's the, you know, he's so down to earth. He just treated everyone really well.
Yeah.
It could backfire though. If new signing A sprints to get the Virgin or the Avanti Pendolino back to London Euston and pulls his hamstring and thus fails the medical.
Yeah, that wouldn't go into Athletic long read. That would go into the freak injury listicle, which is an entirely different thing.
I mean, that may be a sort of... You'll often hear CEOs or whatever will take out a prospective employee to lunch, and a really big part of it will be, well, how were they with the staff? Were they polite? Were they respectful? Or did they think they were above it? So maybe this is like that, and he is seeing how someone deals
with... It's very LinkedIn.
How someone deals with a setback.
My first thought, actually, Charlie, was that this is such a silly thing to do. Then I thought of the times that my dad may have driven me somewhere. And my dad's a very slow driver, a very careful driver, and, you know, quite right too. But the low-key frustration of being driven somewhere slowly when you've got to get there on time is not to be underestimated, I have to say, especially if you're trying to catch a train. So I feel for Lee Bromby's starlets. Speaking of Gary Weaver, though, welcome back, Gary Weaver. Eventually.
Matson. Barnes lets it go. Clever thinking. Gets it back from Brownhill. Matson picks up the pieces.
Here we go.
Beautiful from Burnley. They are back in the championship, but they're not feeling sorry for themselves.
Go on.
They've come out fighting on opening night.
Opening night. Okay.
They have raced out of the blocks, and they have got their rewards with Ian Matson. Who at times lit up the championship last season wearing the shirt of Coventry City.
Go on.
And Burnley have hit the front on West Yorkshire soil.
Yay! The soil
but not
lover
that they
is
planted
back.
The flag.
Yeah. God.
That is a long lead in, isn't it?
Yeah, he got there in the end. Because, I mean, I'm so well-versed am I now, Dave, with Gary Weaver clips that he'll do his initial outburst after a goal, then Hinchcliffe or Goodman will take over, and then he won't come back to talk about the goal again. So I thought the cause was lost, but no, he was there. I went on my Brilliant. Scout and I got it.
But is it Brilliant. Just it? Is there no COCOM there?
Oh, there is.
You've cut it out.
I was going to say, because it did feel like he had to fill in a lot of time on his own there.
I think it was Hinchcliffe, actually. But yeah, I famously can't tell him or Goodman apart, so apologies.
I do keep having that moment. I was watching Sunderland Coventry on Sunday, and yeah, every EFL game I hear now, well, it's one of the two, I do have 5 seconds where I just have to sort of tune my antenna in.
It's amazing. Yeah, exactly.
Work out which one's which.
Completely agree. Yeah. It's amazing. Charlie, this is a weird one. Adama Traore was spotted by various people on Friday in various locations in and around South Staffordshire, including Wombourne Sainsbury's, which I believe is a big Sainos. He was wearing his own Spain Adama 11 shirt while he was going about his business. Is that weird?
Yeah, that, I mean...
Yes.
That does seem... That does seem a bit odd.
What's the selection process? What's the thought process? Where's the thinking there?
It's slightly less conspicuous than if he was to wear his Wolves shirt, I suppose, in the area. But nevertheless, it's, you know, I can't really not maybe he wouldn't complain anyway, but if he were to complain about any selfie merchants, then then you can't really complain if you're wearing your own name on the back of your shirt.
No, I suppose not. Well, actually, that's the only thought I had, Charlie, with this. I feel like maybe he was testing out the old, yeah, in England, you could just walk down the street and nobody will bother you theory. And all he probably got was just people sort of poking their cameras out from around the corner going, why is he wearing that shirt? But it is a strange one.
It is. I mean, because I was going to say, you probably do just have a lot of that gear lying around.
But, that's true.
But you'd also have stash, you know, just the sort of polo shirts and stuff like, and the sort of tight training tops that you can wear without it being quite so identifiable.
Like match worn, presumably.
It has to be. You'd hope so. Yeah,
like that stuff surely gets framed or. Mm.
Obviously, can't frame all of
it. Obviously, didn't. Obviously, nobody wanted to swap with him that night.
Well, he still got it. That suggests this far-fetched scenario that he's just got no clean clothes, so he smashed open a frame and go, right, oh, you would just wear that one.
Fuck it, I never need this.
Didn't play any match. I only played 5 minutes in that match anyway, it doesn't matter.
This was my son's birthday present, but he won't remember. I need to go out and get that cereal.
My goodness. Right, over in America, USL Championship outfit and River Island t-shirt, Sacramento Republic, have reached the final of the US Open Cup, dumping out Sporting Kansas on penalties in the semi-final. The standout moment of this, Dave, was Malik Foster's Panenka penalty. Here's how the commentators reacted.
The Jamaican Malik Foster. The Panenka! Absolutely disgusting! In a moment that called for all sorts of composure, he pulls out all the stops.
Malik Foster, apologize now. This guy's got a family. What are you doing out here? The nerve in this situation to go that route, to employ this method.
Do you know, on the day that the government finally hold their inquiry into Twitter speak being used in real life footballing situations out loud, this would be exhibit A, as far as I'm concerned, Charlie. It just doesn't come across very well when you say it out loud.
Amazing. I mean, this is like about last night sort of levels of...
The pause after disgusting really let it hang in the air, didn't it?
Oh, man, that's amazing. I thought the disgusting bit was going to be it, and then that as well. It is funny because I know quite a few American fans of Tottenham, they use a lot of the language that they've obviously seen from fans and things, and it does and repeats it in those sorts of ways. It is quite funny, but to hear it spoken is very odd.
It's very jarring. Dave, just on a technical point, would you allow a Panenka, and a very well executed one of the best I've seen for a long, long time actually, from Malik Foster, would you accept it under the umbrella of this player has a family for the goalkeeper? Kind of works.
Yeah.
He's been done, basically, hasn't he?
He has. But I don't think you can quite equate it with like leaving a defender on his backside or some sort of outrageous double nutmeg or something.
Mm.
It's because the goalkeeper's got to dive anyway.
Yeah. Okay. You know? Yeah, that's true.
It's more of an impressive achievement for the kicker than it is a terrible thing for the goalkeeper.
Yeah, fair enough. Not quite as embarrassing as being nutmegged or whatever.
On that topic of people having families, I quoted horseracing.net's tweet saying Frankel's 2012 Sussex State, that's it, that's the tweet. I quote tweeted that with stop it Frankel doing Frankel thing, and someone responded saying these horses have families.
Well, no, lineage is quite important in horse racing circles. That's not
very, very large families,
not fact. Irrelevant.
That was B3N Fox, I should give him credit, but it really made me laugh. As excellent did the paddocks won't forget.
The meadows won't forget.
Lovely
stuff. equally
that was
lovely.
Dan Zakiri, the paddocks won't forget.
Excellent. Equally lovely is this. This is from Sean, who was watching Manchester United's friendly against Atletico Madrid. And on MUTV, Dave, Ben Thornley said, when they're under a little bit of cosh. This is in the same ballpark as John Hartson's infamous
what was running it? Amok.
Running an absolute mock.
That's possibly the greatest one ever.
A little bit of kosh.
Just a little bit of kosh.
Kosh is just kind of just general concept. Oh dear, I think it's fantastic. Pre-season form there from commentators, I think. Charlie, this is equally sensational as far as I'm concerned. A transfer rumour emanating from Sky Sports said that Fulham have made an offer for Chelsea defender Malang Sarr. This was quote tweeted by an angry Chelsea fan who said, "I'll drive him to the airport." It's perfect.
That's perfect.
Do you think?
City Airport back to Heathrow.
Yeah, God, think of the Reading would be up in arms about that. But Charlie, should we give him the benefit of the doubt here? Do you think driving player X to the airport myself has transcended geography now, or is it? Can it be conceived as simply as a concept to explain how desperate they are to get rid of him? Or does it really have to be they are going to a foreign country?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, you understand the... It depends how literal.
I would still say literal with this.
Even if you're pushing in the boundaries of it, you could... If he was moving to Manchester United, it's conceivable.
I'd drive him there myself.
No, but you could fly from London to Manchester.
Yeah.
Right? That still is probably a thing they actually do.
Yeah.
To get it done quickly. But Chelsea to Fulham. It's to drive him there myself.
Wouldn't even need driving.
Pay for the bus fare situation.
I'll walk him.
Yeah.
I'll chaperone him.
I'll give him directions there myself.
Yeah. Which he won't listen to, and he'll just check Google Maps anyway.
Yeah,
which is what anyone does when they receive directions.
Absolutely superb. Right, next up, Dave. Daniel Hurley asks, during the Community Shield, Darwin Nunez was referred to by the commentator as the £85 million man. What is the minimum transfer fee that can qualify to be an X amount of money man? It's a good question.
It is.
I think, let's assume Premier League, just to set the benchmark, the context.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you can be anything less than a £20 million man.
Oh, definitely.
I think even higher.
I think 50 would be quite a low mark for me. Yeah,
I was thinking 50. I think you can imagine if it was a club channel commentator, sort of in-house commentator for, say, Fulham, and Fulham had just broken their transfer.
That's the £2.75 million man.
I can imagine a sort of £20 million man if that if that was a big salary for them. But I think if you're talking Sky
even
Sports,
now,
then. Yeah. I think anything less than 50.
Yeah, 50 seems a good benchmark. Yeah, anything less than that is just it's just an average signing now, isn't it?
It's not
that
remarkable.
No, it's not. Okay, fair enough. 50 it is.
But I also think now in the day and age of, you know, undisclosed fees and add-ons and things like that, you know, are we getting the realms of, you know, the £27 million plus a healthy amount of
add-ons? The up to £85 million pound man.
Exactly. Yeah, up to.
If he satisfies all the requirements. Meanwhile, on the curtain raiser day, Struber Stan wrote in, Dave, and said a very important point raised on ITV just now. At what distance / accuracy does a pass become a ball? Now, my first thoughts here was the crucial difference between the two is a pass has an intended recipient. A ball is just it's just put into a dangerous area. It's not necessarily targeted towards anyone. It's just put into an area. And that's the fundamental difference between a pass and a ball, right?
I don't know, though. I think it depends if you're talking about the intent, the sort of intentions or the outcome. Because you would routinely say, what a ball that is from De Bruyne. What a ball that was from Kira Walsh through.
But they're deliveries.
Too.
They're deliveries rather than passes, right? They're usually set-piece deliveries. Well, maybe not. More like a cross. A really good cross. What a ball that is, by the way.
No, but like a slide rule pass, I think you'd see someone go, "What a great ball!"
Great. Mm. I suppose if you shout a great ball at Sunday League, that's a crossfield pass, probably, isn't it? Great ball. Because you're only congratulating them because it landed at the feet of where it was supposed to go, Charlie. So maybe that's a exclusion.
Yeah, that is a hard one, but I think you can say great pass as well if it's hit in such a way that it's not hit, you know, if it's David Beckham or someone hitting a long range pass, I think you could still say, "What a pass! That's a great pass."
Because these waters
so
are muddier than I thought.
Yeah, I think
like a short. You have a long ball and a short pass, don't you?
Yeah, it wouldn't be a short ball. Short ball.
You certainly couldn't. No, you certainly can't say ball.
Ball basically implies lofted, long-ish pass, right? You couldn't play a little quick ball. You could play quick ball though, couldn't you? Quick ball.
You could.
And that's
short. But I think, the ball does it does imply a degree of difficulty.
Yeah. Mm. It's There's artistry involved.
It's always talked about in sort of reverent terms.
What a ball
As you say,
is.
It's because you're looking at it because it's something great has happened. Yeah, you'd never go, oh, that's a really bad ball there from... If someone plays a bad long pass.
Maybe it's quite similar to the distinction in terms of how different they are between shot and finish, Charlie. There's a little bit more specificity to it. Maybe a little bit more artistry, a little bit more something to be admired in a ball and a finish as opposed to a pass and a shot.
Do you have the same clear parameters as you do with some of these other things?
I think I would, though, just thinking about like being at a game or whatever. Like, if someone swings in a cross that looks dangerous, I'd be like, oh, good ball. Like,
yeah.
Even if it doesn't result in anyone getting on the end of it.
Yeah, it looks promising.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that, when you would say that, Charlie, there definitely isn't an intended recipient at all. It's put into
it's a good area.
Yeah, good ball that. Okay, fair enough. It's a tricky one. Don't think we'll ever get to the bottom of it. Thanks to Strubistan. This one, much more open and shut, I think, Charlie. Nikki Ells writes in and says, on the EFL goals roundup, they mentioned Sam Hoskins has 6 goals in his last 7 appearances. Are we accepting these he's in great form stats that span across 2 seasons? No! No way!
Nope.
Well, I think the only... You have to be very upfront about... I think you can say that as long as you make it very clear that it spans across that sort of time frame.
Even if you wanted to span across 2 seasons, Dave, you have to go more than 6 and 7. If it was like 23 in his last 26, that's kind of all right because he's extending a run. But 6 and 7, that's just like... Yeah, you can only do that in October.
Yeah, you can't mention it just offhand like that. You'd have to say, and Sam Hoskins finished last season in great form with 6 in his last 6, and he carried on.
Bang on.
It's up where he left off.
Bang
it's
on.
Like, it's like on social media, doing like hashtag ad. You need to be very upfront about this.
Completely.
You can't be misleading the public in that way.
Yeah, I think it's an absolute joke. Right, bit of a philosophical one for you, Charlie, now. From Bearded Caviar, who says, what makes a player have an eye for goal? Does the criteria change based on position? I don't think a 25-plus goal-a-year striker would ever be described as having an eye for goal. Your thoughts always appreciated. Now, I'm thinking midfielders
who are
trying to add goals to their game.
That's a really good question. I think it's a midfielder who's... It's not their defining feature, but he does have an eye for goal. It's someone who...
Christian Eriksen, maybe?
I think he might score a few too many.
A few too many, okay.
I wonder, and this might be... He might not have quite enough, but someone like Rodri at City, if he's like, you know, not only is a midfield enforcer, he's got an eye for goal as well. You know,
okay, that's an interesting
because he's getting a few a year, sort of quite spectacular ones as well.
Well, that's interesting. So you interpret potentially as eye for goal meaning he can spot an opportunity to shoot rather than Lampard style getting in positions to score, stealing into the box. You think it's more of a kind of speculative 30-yarder situation?
I think Lampard, it's too much his defining characteristic. Like, his game is scoring goals.
You would never say Lampard had an eye for goal?
Only in his early days at West Ham, where he didn't score many and was kind of more of a box-to-box midfielder. You'd be like,
it's too obvious, yeah.
Yeah, he gets up and down, he's got an eye for goal. Hmm. I just don't, you know, you wouldn't be saying that once he's scoring, like, almost 20 a season.
Dave, if you were talking about a centre-half who sort of guarantees you 6-7 goals a season from set pieces or maybe takes the odd penalty, is that an eye for goal? Can centre-halves have an eye for goal?
I think Charlie's right. It does sort of imply someone who would take shots from outside the box. It doesn't feel right. Like Steve Bruce, for example, you know, or even John Terry or whatever, famed goal-scoring centre-halves.
Mm.
It doesn't feel right to say they've got an eye for a goal, really.
No, they're a threat
at set pieces more.
Yeah, you specify it more, don't you, about why they're
a
potential goal threat. Yeah, so maybe it's almost exclusively a midfielder thing then.
I think it is.
To add a twist this, Charlie, you wouldn't say Emil Heskey had an eye for a goal because he didn't score enough as a striker. Like, no. It just doesn't work that way, does it? No.
Because then you're thinking, you should have more of an eye for goal.
Absolutely. Right. Some very good questions answered on this episode, actually. But I'd like to play us out with something very strange. I got a DM from someone whose name I won't reveal. He recorded his year 8 pupils' lunchtime football game. And it has way more atmosphere than I ever remember any playground's football game at my school ever having. Here are the latter stages of ties 3, non-ties 1.
Oh,
It's the range of songs as well. There's the final whistle.
We are the non-tie payers.
Now,
sensational.
Now, I don't know if I'm reading too much significance into all of this, Dave, but it's absolutely brilliant. And as I said, I don't remember any sort of atmosphere like this at games. And I'm also inclined to believe this was entirely natural and not staged for our purposes. But this is the clincher for all of this. The unnamed teacher writes in and says, "I was in the tie's end, as I too wear a tie." The end. What is this guy? Who is this bloke?
On the terrace.
With the tie's ultras.
What is your favourite moment of this, Dave?
It's the songs. The we hate non-ties, and the come on you ties.
I also enjoyed the frantic appeals, Charlie, from one player to presumably the teacher stroke referee, who had to give out that it was 5 minutes left of break time. And then he relayed that information back to the players. 5 minutes! Five!
That is
sensational.
Amazing. Yeah.
But the reason I'm inclined to believe it was natural is because none of this feels completely implausible for a playground football game. This doesn't feel like, you know, over-engineering it. This feels like, you know, lots of people watching and singing songs while their peers play football in front of them. Seems fine to me.
Yeah, we never had anything like this at all, because it sounds like there's a lot of kids not playing.
Mm.
Whereas in my school...
Yeah.
If there were that many kids interested in football, most of them have just played and it'd been more like a ludicrous sort of 20-a-side match or something stupid like that.
Yeah. The only situation, Charlie, where so many people will be stood around watching something is if two people were absolutely smacking the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
Singing Sweet Caroline at the end of it.
We had like a 5-a-side tournament and people would watch that. And I remember people seeing like the referee's a teacher and that sort of thing.
Good,
and
cool.
Then the referee's got asthma because he was asthmatic.
Oh, Jesus.
A bit harsh, but,
personal.
Yeah. If you're gonna, if you're gonna ref, you know that you're opening yourself up to that sort of thing.
Yeah, Charlie, thanks to you.
Thank you very much,
Dave. Hope you continue to bask in the Lioness's glory.
Thank you. Will do.
And thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back on Thursday with the Clichés Quiz.
The Athletic.